Welcome to the IPv6 Buzz podcast, where we dare to dive into the 128-bit address space wormhole. I'm Ed Horley with my co-host Tom Cuffin and Scott Hoag. And for this episode, we're going to talk about sort of the learning journey around IPv6. And we're going to do this with our friend and colleague, Nicole. And Nicole, last name, Vayer, right? So everyone's going to see it in the notes, but so I just wanted to make sure. But Nicole's with Cisco, and she's been a fantastic speaker in many of the Cisco Lives. So if you've ever attended Cisco Live and you attended an IPv6 session, there's probably one or two people that you've attended it with. It's either Tim Martin or Nicole. All right. And so we just wanted to sort of explore her journey around learning IPv6. So welcome to the show. Hopefully we can have some fun together here.
Awesome. Thank you.
Yeah. So let's jump straight into it, because I think, for me, I think I first met you actually in the on the speaker side with Tim. We were doing sessions together, but I had seen you speak and present before at Cisco Live around IPv6, and I'd seen some of the remote presentations and things like that. And I was sort of scratching my head. I'm like, where did she come from? All right. So I sort of was like, oh, what motivated you around sort of your overall journey around learning IPv6? Like, how did that happen? Because it's not very common, at least even within the Cisco community, it's not that common to find that many V6 people. So I wanted to start there. What brought it all on?
It was, I started laughing when you say, where did you come from? Because you know what? You're not the only one. Every customer who I talk to, even or in technology, they say, where were you? Where have you been? And I always say, I'm the best kept secret. But yes, indeed. I mean, as a woman, it's in this still man dominated environment. When I joined Cisco, and that's over 12 years ago now, I remember I was talking to my peers and my colleagues, you know, and what do you want to do? And they, you know, they gave me this guidance saying, you know, Nicole, pick a technology where you will stand out, where you will be the one that people will come to you and will be famous for. And passionate with Cisco technology or any technology that's internet related. I thought, you know what, let's dream big, think big. And I decided IPv6 is the one where I will spend my time, because it's basically the ground where you need, I mean, your telephone number for running around the internet. That started, let's say, yes, 12 years ago, maybe 12 years ago. And that's where I started meeting Tim, Eric Venk, Steve Simlow, and learning and deep diving into it and getting my hands dirty. That way, that's the only way with technology you will learn most of it. And that's where my journey began. And I still love it till this day, because it's quite a ground where people are scared to go to.
Yeah, I think you're in a unique position, definitely in that area. I mean, there's not a lot of women in the IPv6 community overall, I guess, besides yourselves. I mean, I guess Veronica McCullough, Sylvia Hagen.
Yeah.
Maybe there's a few more. Maybe Justine Vick up at Microsoft. And
Natalie Trenemann from Ripe.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's definitely a smaller community. And I think that's just a reflection of just, you know, the unfortunate situation of less women involved in IT, which I think we all have to work on
that exactly. One.
But yeah, I mean, and you listed some wonderful people. I mean, Tim is, I've known Tim for years and years and years, and just flying the IPv6 flag for such a long time. And many people may not know Steve Simlow, but Steve for a long time owned sort of IPv6 from a big picture perspective at Cisco, in terms of sort of the overarching, like trying to help coordinate many things around there. It's very unfortunate when he had to sort of shift positions out of that role. It's been a difficult one for Cisco to try and, you know, sort of, it's sort of an irreplaceable role among the
exactly.
community. But yeah, you've had some very talented and good mentors, because Eric is talented too. And Eric's the co-author with Scott on Scott's book. So
yes, that's
on the
exactly.
show that don't know, on the IPv6 security book. So Scott and Eric are thick as thieves, I guess, on that side.
Yeah. Eric's brilliant.
yeah, absolutely. You know, it's always a delight to talk to him around the V6 stuff. Well, I mean, how did maybe as a pivot to that, because we can talk a little bit about how you got started in terms of like resources. What you know, you have the distinct advantage maybe over other people that you got to start inside of Cisco, right, around learning B6. So maybe you have some insider knowledge around additional resources to help sort of get started around IPv6. Like what did you do to get yourself sort of going and started, and what was that sort of like? Because I mean, definitely 11 years ago, a lot more challenging than it is today.
Exactly. I mean, nowadays, I mean, there's the world is your oyster, as one would say, and for people old enough, they will understand that meaning. But at that time, there was still a lot of content available on the internet. Thank God, a lot of blogs to read about, and as you said, right within Cisco, I am very blessed because we have a sea of information. I mean, it's not even a swimming pool, but it's like an ocean of information which I can just access for free on any technology, and that gives me the opportunity to learn. And as one of my colleagues always said, you know, within Cisco, it's like a university. You can constantly keep learning, you know, every day, and that's how I started. You know, getting all the resources within internally, talking to people. I remember many times the discussion about the flow label, why that was so unique compared to the legacy protocol. I love it to read, as Tim Martin always said, the legacy protocol. and consistency. And so that way I started learning and talking and going to seminars at those times, which were set up by Eric Venk and those other icons in the industry.
Yeah, I think Fred Baker was involved with a lot of
those. Yes. Oh, yeah, you know what? With all respect, oh my God, he's my mentor as well. I should have mentioned him as well. You know what? He was actually the one who taught me a lot of things about it as well. I spent so many times talking to him a lot when he was at Cisco. I still miss him dearly on a daily basis. I really look up to him as a person and on technology.
Yeah, he's a wonderful resource, and I think happily retired down in sort of the middle coast of California. I think he's down in the Santa Barbara area.
He is Santa Barbara, correct.
yeah. So but I think Fred is comfortably and happily retired now on that side. So he's, yeah. I think he washed his hands of many of the IPv6 things. He's like, I'm IGF chair, I'm out of here. You guys go deal with this stuff now. Yep. That was the last impression I got when I was chatting with him. But did you also do some V6 along with sort of certification studies? Was that part of things that you worked on too, or was that sort of a separate thing altogether?
So the certifications in my time was, I do remember that I was, I remember ServNet at the time was asking me about, just out of a customer relationship, that they wanted to see more IPv6 in the Cisco certification at the time. And so I was as enthusiastic as I am, I was, starting asking around because I thought it was a very good question and it made a lot of sense to add that in the certifications. In my time, when I had those certs, there was none. And the last ones I did, thank God there were IPv6 in there. And there's, well, for me, very easy, but you can just imagine for people that have never looked at V6, they go like, so I never gave those questions, but I did talk to those people, you know, sort of strongly advising them that they should definitely reconsider putting some IPv6 in there. And that was 11 years ago. So that's when it all started.
I can hear the collective screams of everyone who has to take those exams. Like, why did she do this to us?
Exactly. I always say that even in my presentations, you know, if you fail or if your network goes down and your IT manager says why, just blame Nicole. I'm okay with that.
It's funny you mentioned the certification piece because I recall back in a previous professional life in the mid-2000s, I was working for a VAR that was very Cisco focused, and they're like, "Yeah, you got to go get your CCIE," and I studied for it and sat the lab and failed, and then moved on. But in the process of studying for the both the written and the lab, that was my first exposure at a deeper level to IPv6. I mean, it was already in the certification materials. Like this is probably like 2005. And I don't know, you know, I don't have my notes to really go back and sort of as more of an IPv6 person now to sort of see where it was sitting. I remember trying to get, there was still like a NAT66 lab in the certification practice that we couldn't get to work. And I think it was just like a code thing. And when I think back on it now, I'm like, that's pretty funny that NAT66 wasn't working. But the point of all of this is just to say that a couple of years later, when I was asked to deploy IPv6 at Limelight, I had enough of a foundation from the Cisco certification material that I wasn't intimidated by it. Like it was like, all right, I don't know everything there is to know about this clearly, but I feel like comfortable enough with it that I can move forward with it. So I don't know the journey that certification, that IPv6 and Cisco certification materials has taken since then, but I can attest that for me, it was critical and you know, giving me a little more confidence to like deploy IPv6 the first time.
And that's exactly right. That I do even remember a colleague, even in the CCIE security, there is some a fair amount of IPv6. People are just scared by it because, you know, oh, I haven't touched that subject yet. And, oh, if they don't, please don't ask me too many questions. But by the end of the day, you know, it's seriously not a tough cookie at all. But people just need to get their hands dirty. And then it's very simple, I would say.
I thought she was going to say it was not a tough cookie, but a tough stroopwafel, but...
I should say that, yes. The stroopwafel should be a really good one. I mean, that's definitely one of the things, you know, besides IPv6, people, you know, would just follow after me and say, I want my stroopwafel. Of course, because it's a Dutch cookie, so I'll pronounce it in the proper Dutch way, and you can make it any waffle you like. So people who are listening is like, what is she talking about? It's a divine Dutch cookie with caramel in between. If you are flying United, well, at this moment, probably nobody is flying. But if you're flying United, you get such a cookie. It's a sugar rush, basically. And beside my V6 passion, I decided to, okay, how do I get people, you know, to remember me beside that I talk forever? I thought, you know what, I'll give them something, you know, a sugar rush is what people definitely will remember. And so anywhere on Cisco Live or any other event, if you bump into me, you just hand out your hand and say, give me my stroopwafel. And most likely I will reach down my bag and you will get one.
Yes, it's like a /64. She has an unlimited supply when she's walking around Cisco Live.
It is. And can you just imagine, you know, that I managed to even get sponsored so I don't need to buy them anymore?
Well, there you go.
Oh, man, I'm so
now,
jealous.
Now you need to get custom ones made that have an IPv6 logo stamped.
I'm thinking of that, indeed. I mean, currently I do have custom made and one that has my picture on there. In the beginning, when I got them over Christmas, I thought to myself, no, this is too much. You know, this is too much of, you know, me on front of a stroopwafel, you know, package. But the funny part was that the first 10 people, they said, oh, this is so cool. And this is insane. So that was brilliant. So then there was only one person said, Nicole, really? And I said, no, don't go there. I mean, 10 people in front of you already said this was the best thing ever with my face on there. So
that's funny. Well, I mean, maybe we can pivot a little bit and talk about the journey going up and learning is always an interesting one. But yes, there's a different change about going and deciding that you actually want to like start teaching other people. Like it's a big leap. And for many people, I don't know about Tom and Scott. I mean, for me, it was always like, besides writing books, it was one of those things of like, do you really know a subject? And the only way to prove you really know a subject is to teach someone else that subject to really determine whether you know it very well. And then to be able to do that for a wider audience in terms of like, you know, either speaking publicly or doing trainings or things of that nature. So just sort of curious, I mean, what popped in your head that you decided that you sort of wanted to go beyond just knowing the the topic really well and actually start sort of like spreading the word, as it would be.
Exactly. Yeah. So that reminded me there are three I want to highlight. Is that I had to do a presentation in front of the whole Dutch education about the readiness of IPv6 within Cisco. So that was the first time, you know, I was in a large group talking about IPv6. And of course, these people, you know, you could see their faces and challenging me, you know, and what about, you know, this product, how does it support V6? And can we do more throughput at that time? We're talking about a Catalyst 6500 with the firewall service module. Oh my God. It could only do 100 MB of IPv6 traffic. And at the time when I was presenting, because the audience was asking, so Nicole, you know, how can we deploy V6 if we only have a firewall service module? And I was so relieved that on that day, Cisco had announced the ASA service module. And so I could publicly speak because it's also recorded. So most likely you will be even able to find the recording back when I said, I can still remember my quote. I said, yeah, you know what? Today we announced the ASA service module and it can do 16 gig of throughput on IPv6. And then there was a pause. And then I said, and those are not the marketing numbers. And the whole audience was laughing. And another mentor of Edurom called Klaas Wieringa, he was watching remote and he sent me an SMS saying, really, Nicole, not marketing. I said, well, that's me. I mean, I'm not a marketing girl. I don't like to overdo. If something cannot go faster, you should not tell it can go faster. That was one. That was one. And then I started teaching, indeed, V6 in the Netherlands to Dutch partners. So we had some labs which we had available, and so teaching them a full day on seriously the basics, just how to put in an IPv6 address on the interface, how does it look like. Do not be scared to slap a /64 on a point-to-point link. Oh my God, that freaked out everybody.
It still does.
Correct. Exactly. And so I remember even in Cisco Live in Orlando, oh my God, this guy, he could not grasp it. Bless him. And I just said, let it go. You'll be fine. Let it go. We have enough. And then I got the opportunity to speak at Cisco Live. And that gave me so much energy. And that is expanding. So, yes, so those were the events, how I preach it. And I'm even thinking of about, you know, I'm not a writer myself, but I would like to blog or make videos and to explain, because still people would benefit from it.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, maybe I pivot a little bit and talk back to your days of working with your sort of Dutch service providers and folks there. And what is the status over there for you in terms of in country? It's since we get the rare opportunity, we're all here in the U.S., so we have a very U.S.-centric view. So let's open it up a little bit and talk about what you're seeing over on your side of the pond there in terms of sort of V6 adoption within your geography and sort of your experience of the folks that you're working with. What does that look like right now?
And that's a very valid question, right? So people are busy. I mean, and it depends, of course, who you talk to, because of course, when I tell about my passion, mostly the first thing any person I come to, they say IPv6, but nobody's using IPv6, which, I mean, that's a whole different, let's say, discussion, which we probably can go deeper on later. But it's in Europe, a lot of people or a lot of enterprises are very active. Universities, for instance, because they need to report who goes where, and because universities are so massive, then, you know, the legacy protocol doesn't scale. And so they really see the major benefit on IPv6. A lot of developers also see the benefit on IPv6 for scaling-wise in their data centers and when they're developing. Yet some of them are also a little bit scared because of the fact that they, well, don't have enough knowledge, would love to go into that, but then they are sort of bound by their management, because then again, oh, it costs time. Yeah, how much time? Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, but that costs money. So please do it first on the legacy protocol. That's always how it starts. Yet this year in Cisco Live Europe, which was held in Barcelona end of January, a lot of customers asked in a lot of sessions about the IPv6. How does it work? RIPE is out, so they don't have legacy protocol anymore. You don't get them unless you really have a use case, but then you only get a bare minimum of addresses. And so you see it the more and more. So I would say definitely it's active, but people are not actively looking, sales teams, because they are also scared to talk about it because they don't have the knowledge either. So I was about to say it's almost a chicken and an egg story, I would say.
Yeah, it's interesting to me how many folks still struggle with understanding the basic concepts around IPv6, even though I feel like, at least here in the United States, that many of the service providers are well down the road of doing, you know, in some cases, you know, for mobile operators, it's the predominant protocol they're utilizing.
Yes.
And the content delivery folks are all there. So there's... It's really the lack of enterprise and enterprise knowledge that's preventing that last little bit to get across the finish line in any substantial way, because they don't have the skill sets. And I don't know if it's a lack of investment by sort of the employer side, if it's a lack of interest on the side of network teams, or if there's just so much overwhelming amount of work that just is already there for working on the legacy protocol, because we dug ourselves into a humongous hole in terms of the technology side, that it's just too hard to add something yet again when we're trying to automate everything, you know, trying to automate the world and trying to, that's definitely a big thing. And cloud being a large scale sort of adoption effort for many organizations today also. So it seems like it's just being left by the wayside. But the reality is that I think much of the rest of the ecosystem has moved along. And so it's an interesting dichotomy that the enterprises are choosing to stay on the legacy protocol and continue to operate there. And obviously, you know, the mass majority of the internet is still continues to work just fine on the legacy protocol. It's not like it's going to stop suddenly. But, you know, it's definitely feels like there's going to turn, I feel like it's going to turn into a have and have nots soon in terms of differentiating between companies.
It's even also about comfort zone, right? So that you stick what you are comfortable with, then you are not prone easily to mistakes that quickly. And that's where people start. I mean, you always do the things first what you're good at. I always explain that with homework. Which homework is always finished first is the subjects that are you love, you enjoy, go well. And then the things you struggle with and take the longest time, you leave them to the end or might not even do that. And that's sort of where that goes. And even with the money perspective, you know, that they tend to go easily. Okay, no, let's do that V6 later. Yet, as you say, right, with the automation, it would have been a perfect moment just to start off with IPv6 only.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more in terms of introducing the protocol to be able to sort of put it out at scale. I think the challenge is that they're trying to learn two skills at the same time. Like, it's like, oh my gosh, I have to learn Python and Ansible, or I have to learn, you know, all these things. And then you want me to learn V6 too? Like, I can only handle so much. Or
exactly.
I can't recall how many times I've heard people say, I want to retire before I have to deploy IPv6. I mean, that's just the top of the list of like comments that I hear people saying. Over and over, it's like, oh, if we just hold off another year or two, I'll be retired before I won't have to deal with this. Someone else will have to take care of it as a deployment thing. It's sort of entertaining. I'm finally to the point where, like you said that 2 years ago, I think you've hit that mark. You have to deploy it. Well, Scott and I have actually co-presented with you at Cisco Live. Yes. And I think we both together did that in the U.S., I know you present on a regular basis in US and Europe and probably other countries. I think you probably have done like
Melbourne.
Melbourne, yeah, which is awesome. It's great that you get a chance to travel and go do that sort of stuff. And I don't know, how's the experience of sort of presenting at a huge event like Cisco Live sort of changed how you sort of think and teach IPv6 to other people? Because it's such a different, and Scott and I can both sort of attest to this, it's such a different, and Tom can too, because he's done a lot of presentations for much larger organizations around task force and conferences.
Oh, but nothing at that size. So my hat's off to you guys.
Ours were all pretty limited in scope. I mean, there weren't that many people showing up for the IPv6 session. It wasn't like the keynote or something.
Oh, don't tell me that.
but it is a very different thing to prepare for, and many people who don't get the chance or opportunity. But I mean, doing stuff around that, I mean, I sort of thought it'd be fun to talk about that really quickly, because it is a different mindset to have to get into. And Tim Martin sets a pretty high bar in terms of having to do a session with him and follow up. And if you haven't ever seen one of Tim's sessions, go watch, because it's spectacular. He does a fantastic job. But what was it like maybe your first time? And then what did you learn of, like, what do I have to change in order to, like, present to, you know, a room full of single, double, triple CCIEs who, like, are going to ask you questions that you're like, I never thought of that before, and I've never had that from an operational deployment. I mean, that was the thing I was probably the most nervous about. I don't know, Scott, what you were most nervous about, but for me, it was like having that level person walk up and be like, well, when you're doing this with this bit flip on BGP doing this, this, and this, it's like, you know, what do you see as behavior on this platform versus that platform? I'm like, oh, hold on a second. I'm a host operating system, IPv6 guy. And I was like, but I don't know. I don't know what your experience was like, but I think it's sort of entertaining to talk through that.
Yeah, exactly. You just reminded me of such a load of things. So I still remember on the day that Steve Simlo asked me to, if I wanted to join the circus, we called Cisco Live Circus somehow. It's actually Auto California, you know. Once you're in, you can't never leave. So you can come in when you like, but you can never leave. I remember that when you are first-time speaker, you are sort of mandatory do some training, and if you're your session group manager or so-called SGM is really taking it extremely serious, the first timers also need to do dry runs. And so, yes, I had to do a dry run myself as well. And that dry run felt so miserably. Oh my God. And I could see Steve's face, and he was so political correct. And he, I mean, he never said to my face, Nicole, that was horrible. But I could see it. So I actually sent an email saying, this was the worst ever, guys. I know what to do now. You know, my 2 feet were on the ground, because it was Cisco Live Milan at the time when I started my tutorial for the first time. And I literally aced it that year, because I became a distinguished speaker. And for the listeners, that distinguished speaker, when the 10% of all the speakers of all the sessions, the 10% get a distinguished speaker badge. And so it's a very unique thing and an honor to receive. And I was seriously crying when I got that email, because I had no clue that I was in the top 10%. And from that on, yes, the bar was Tim Martin high. And so and that way I kept that level high, because as you said, right, you have so many CCIEs in the room. They come and listen to you because they want to learn. And everybody pays for it, or their company pays for it. So they should get the maximum out of it. And so specifically within Cisco, we really take it serious. And including presentation skills and the content we present. And so that it just gives me a boost that people, when they're in the room, get excited. Every audience is different. You need to be careful what kind of jokes you make in Europe versus America. It's the jokes are a little bit different. The people in the audience, for instance, in US, they really like to be entertained. In Europe, they're a bit more relaxed. They really want to have technology most for it. And Melbourne, it's a mix. And so, I mean, I remember that what I also do is that when people ask questions, I give them a stroopwafel, for instance. I do that on purpose, or that I keep the interaction going. And I remember in America, I actually, this one guy said to me, I already knew the answer, but I was hungry and I wanted the stroopwafel. So he was honest. And then at one point I said, and you can listen in on one of the recordings, and I'm just trying to remember now, I think it was Orlando, that I said, if anybody asks about if Nat is a good idea, they do not get a stroopwafel. I just threatened them. So nobody asked about Nat. So that was good.
Well, and let's talk about the questions that folks ask in the tutorial. For those that don't know, there's a whole sort of pre-session before Cisco Live formally kicks off the day before. I don't know if it's 2 days or just one day, but there's a whole set of tutorials that are specialty tutorials that are designed for, you know, deep dive technical sessions, half day, one day. And there's IPv6 is one of them. And Nicole and Tim are, I would say, the primary track folks who actually run that along with Eric Vinke. Too. And so I think what's interesting is what do folks really sort of concentrate on and ask about in terms of IPv6 in the sessions? My experience was really, besides the fundamentals, was really getting into how do I deal with multi-site topologies and how do I deal with, you know, different regions of the world and you know, how do I deal with, you know, security zoning and things like that. I don't know if that's still the case. You're actively doing Cisco Live. I think it was a few years ago that I was doing it. So what seems to have been the trend around sort of the questions that people are asking around V6?
Yeah, so just to start off with the tectorial part. So tectorials are only a day. And you used to have 4-hour tectorials or 8 hours. And that's like 2 hours presentation, 15 minutes break, then another 2 hours. Then you had hour lunch and then another 2 hours and 15 minutes break and then another 2 hours. And seriously, by the end of the day, you were roasted as a chicken, turkey, or whatever favorite food type you put on for a long, slow roasting. And nowadays we are looking into breaking those down in 4-hour sessions also, because for instance, IPv6, some people do know the basics already, so they don't need to, the first 4 hours are sort of, well, I already knew this and I didn't want to hear it parts, but it's a very good primer if you come to Cisco Live and you really want to get a speed learning curve on any technology. Even on ASA firewalls, you can do that, or SD-WAN, for instance. So, but also on IPv6. And most of the questions indeed are design related, or how address planning is one of those as well. Or should I go for a provider assigned or a provider allocated? How should I go about those? Because mostly also multinationals customers are in the room, are one of the things. Or even, you know, people still struggling with their developers, that because it's not just the network, it's an end-to-end story with IPv6. So yeah, it's the everybody's in it together versus mm-hmm. it's me versus you.
Yeah, I think the thing I noticed that was a sort of a delight and a nice surprise was that from a routing perspective, everyone pretty much got it. Like, I was like, you know, like, yeah, I know how to do routing in IPv4 and it doesn't look that much different in V6. So I'm like, yeah, that's pretty much accurate. It's not really that big of a challenge in terms of the routing protocol side. It was much more around the like, all right, there's some nuanced things. Like how should I deal with like loopback addresses? And how should I deal with like, you know, as you mentioned, point-to-point links and then like, how do I deal with address allocation? Like, is it DHCP V6? Is it Slack? Like, how does that work? Where do we do this within what portions of the enterprise? You know, I'm a service provider. What do I do that looks different than, you know, an enterprise? And are there other things that I need to, you know, keep a lookout from? And I would agree, there were just a ton of address planning questions. Even though I was screaming at the top of my lungs, just to take Veronica's session around address planning. And I don't know who's teaching it today because Veronica's no longer with Cisco, but I don't know if that's you now.
We did. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I did do the address planning. We had Jim Bailey do it as well.
Okay. Jim does it. Yeah,
exactly. No, and true, right? And it's specifically the address planning because people really want to subnet, you know, so badly. And we did just, you know, again, let it go, you know, there's enough addresses. And we, by the way, Ed, your mathematical, you know, explaining about depletion of a /64. I mean, that's the best I always use every time as an example. It's the best to explain, you know, it's like so many years, you know, you will not run out.
I'm glad that was useful. That's one of my crazy little blog posts. And then Tim read it and he's like, seems like a reasonable, he calls it Hoyle math. So
exactly. And I still use it as well. I mean, because it works. And then I do end up with a visual because I'm a visual person. So how big, you know, the differences are. And then I show a small person on the ground with a 6'5" person next to it explaining that's IPv6 for you there. So you will not run out.
Well, I didn't know, Scott, Tom, I didn't know if there was anything that you guys wanted to ask in specifics around anything that Nicole has been up to. I know and Scott and Nicole have presented in the past. Tom, I didn't know if there was anything around V6 specific that you wanted to pop in with too.
Yeah, there is. And specifically, you know, with the training and education of IPv6, I'm always curious to sort of see, and maybe I just heard the answer, but what is it? What is the one sort of concept or IPv6, like area, the technical area of IPv6 that sort of, that you see the scales fall from people's eyes and they get it or something that you can really sense that they've shifted and can embrace IPv6 because they're not as afraid of it. But there has to be like some technical topic that gives them that sort of inroad into IPv6. And Nicole, what if there is one that you've seen, could you maybe share that with our audience?
So basically, you know, when they start, you know, opening their eyes and figuring out, because at some point people don't know that they are already running IPv6. And so they think that they are, okay, I'm going to start and I'm going to turn that button on and now I'm running IPv6. Just by, you know, asking them, you know, are you running IPv6? And then you would see literally 10% raising their hand, unfortunately. And then I say to people, okay, who runs Windows on their network and who runs macOS? And then, of course, everybody raises their hand. They have to, because otherwise otherwise they would be lying. and then I say to them, I said, listen, you are running IPv6 and most likely you will be talking IPv6 to endpoints which you haven't known yet. Have a look on your network and you'll be amazed. And then you could see those eyes go like, oh yeah, yes, you're right. And oh no, we definitely need to move forward now. Because of course, I mean, turning off IPv6 is not the solution. Then you could see in their eyes, they're like, oh yes, hey, now we need to do this. And it's all about giving them confidence that it's not different. It's very easy. And once it's on, the network will not break. Because if you break V6, guess what? The network is not broken because you still fall back to V4. And that's where people are scared because they think that they will totally break something. And it's just those let's say maybe 5%. Yes, it could happen. I mean, I'll be honest as well. That's my honesty coming out. Yes, it can happen. I think at one keynote in Cisco Live US, this was Vegas, and I will not mention the year. It was actually IPv6 that broke the keynote network because the tables run out. Yes. So they had to reset the switches.
I remember that one.
So yes, it can happen, and then we call it the Nicole problem. So all good.
I think that was the Andrew problem that year.
that was not V6 related actually. The Andrew problem. I do remember that one as well. Oh my God. I never saw men running so quickly. And then we only figured out, by the way, that was actually the legacy protocol misconfiguration. And we forgot that we had IPv6. We could easily just connect it to the systems on IPv6. And that story I do tell in my presentation nowadays as an example, that you forget that you have two address families and you secure one and you forget the other. And in this case, we secured the legacy protocol in a wrong way, by the way. I mean, nobody had access. But we totally forgot about the other address family, and because sleep deprivation was high at the time. And then only later this other guy said, oh, but you could have reached the machines over V6. And I remember Andrew and I looking at each other and it's like, oh yeah.
Yeah, Ed already mentioned one IPv6 excuse, you know, that older IT professionals falsely believe that they can retire before IPv6 deployment. There's a comical IPv6 excuse bingo card, similar to conference call bingo, that can be found on the internet. Nicole, what are the biggest objections to IPv6 that you often hear teaching, and how do you respond and convince people of IPv6's benefits?
So I do remember this was in Orlando when I was talking to people, not only there, by the way, but mostly the first one is always like, well, nobody's using it. It's still even, you know, I played Pokemon Go, and people say, oh, is that still active? And I was like, oh my God, guys, it's just as ever. And so nobody's using it, and that's an easy one. I mean, they're mine. For the next 15 minutes, I'll explain to them that is not true, and they sort of look at me like, oh, I wish I hadn't said that. Now, some people did tell me that they were intrigued and even fascinated, and put definitely on their to-do list, like learning IPv6. Or when I tell them, one of the bingo words is, oh, yes, I still need to do that. And then period. And then they don't continue. Or, you know, they say there's other issues that needs to be handled first before we go there. That's another one which could be definitely on the IPv6 bingo card. It's all about the scariness. Remember that I said, you know, when you need to do your homework, you leave the tough subjects or the things you're not good at or less knowledgeable about, you leave to last. And that's definitely with IPv6 as well. Because, okay, how do you do certain stuff? Where can you find all the information? They just wanted to have a box, you know, and turn it on and it just works. That would be the ideal situation.
Yeah, I think the other part on sort of the objection side, and I don't know, you know, and I think probably at least I find it amusing, is the fact that they try to argue that because of the fact that they have enough V4 address space, they don't need to do anything. I think that's probably the most amusing to me. It's sort of like, you know, it's not really about you and how much address space you have. It's the fact that so many other people on the internet who are trying to join the internet, who are new to the internet, new companies, whatever else, or parts of the world that don't have enough allocation and can't get it, like they can only do V6, right? Like they're only going to come on with V6. How do you intend to, like, are you just going to ignore them? Pretend they don't exist? I mean, that's the part that's sort of the interesting one that also gets a lot of eyes opening. I don't know if, Nicole, that's one of the common things you ask.
True, actually.
Walk them through. It's like, hey, have you thought about this? It's not just you just assume the internet is the internet, but you seem to forget that there's two protocols running on the internet. If you don't participate with both, you're only going to have visibility to the legacy protocol portion of the internet. You literally can't see the other parts of it. Now, today, everyone's trying to be accommodating and dual stacking to make sure that both their services are available on both, but that's not going to continue forever. I think I would see that as one of the things. And I think just objection-wise, it's always fascinating to hear folks from those sorts of organizations are like, yeah, we've got so much IPv4 address space, it's ridiculous. We never have to worry about this. And I'm like, okay.
it's me. And the rest can go somewhere else. It's true, right? And even the Dutch government now this year are very actively to get all their, let's say, front end towards the customer on V6 as well. They are the websites, email services, DNS, all those things are, most of the government was already, you know, V6 enabled, but now it's even a stronger mandate even nowadays. And it reminded me now when you said that, that indeed a year and a half ago, I was doing a presentation in Oman. My colleague asked me, he said, Nicole, can you come to Oman and talk to all the customers because there's a mandate of IPv6. And I still remember at the time I said to my husband, I'm going to Oman. And he's just sort of like, yes, darling, as if you were not traveling enough. And I said, well, but I've never been to Oman. What happened there was that it started off with 70 people registering. And on the day itself, I said, so how many people are joining? Oh, well, we had to stop registration at 100. And I said, okay. And then during the presentation, every 5 minutes, literally the door opened, more chairs came in, more people came in, and that kept going for half an hour. And then after an hour, my colleague came to me and stood next to me. I couldn't move because it was so busy that everybody was so on top of each other, or close to each other, that he said, Nicole, we need to do a break. I said, what? Yes, there are a lot of people outside and they don't want to leave because they want to listen to the IPv6 story. So it's people are, they are interested, but only, you know, yeah, mandate probably helps a little bit as well, because otherwise they rather just go by the daily, you know, because why change something if it's not broken, right?
Yeah, that's pretty common as an answer. It's sort of like I don't want to introduce something that might break what I already am doing today. I definitely agree with that. Well, very cool. I don't know if Tom or Scott, if we have any final thoughts or any wrap up questions we want to do or hit, but I think we might need a final, you know, Stroopwafel a thank you for Nicole.
Thank you.
unfortunately, I don't have any sitting in front of me because I sort of like one. It's morning time for me. It's late afternoon for Nicole.
Yes. My guess is that it's always time for Stroopwafels.
That's a good point.
Exactly.
And just as a funny side note, I think Scott put a note in here. What is this about Nicole's status with Cisco?
Exactly. I'm the CSO. I wanted to be I mean, you need to have fun in life. And in the directory where we can find everybody within Cisco, you can alter your title. So officially, I'm a technical solution architect within Cisco. but, you know, I like to also have fun. You know, you need to laugh. Laugh is very important because also it reduces stress a lot. And with the mix of technology, it's great. And so I thought to myself, you know, I mean, I still one day I want to be a CXO. I don't know which one, but I like, you know, I like a little bit of power. Why not? And I thought to myself, how can I, you know, change this, do this? And literally at that time, I looked in what I had in my hand and it was a stroopwafel. So then I thought, oh yes, Chief Stroopwafel Officer. And I literally changed the title. So I always tell people, you know, open Google the word Cisco and Google the word stroopwafel, of course, in one sentence, Cisco space stroopwafel. And you will find the blog about life as a chief stroopwafel officer. And it's I like it. It's brilliant.
That's really cool. Well, unlike V6, we've run out of space for this podcast. You can reach out to the IPv6 Buzz on Twitter. We're at IPv6 Buzz. And you can also hit up each of us on Twitter. Tom is at IPv6 Tom. Scott is at Scott Hoag. I'm at E. Horley. And thanks to today's guest, Nicole. How can the audience follow you on the internet? I mean, like, I know you're on Twitter, so that's a given, but other places that they can go ahead and interact with you and give us your Twitter handle while we're at it.
Yes, no, thank you so much. And definitely my Twitter handle is vlinder_NL. And if you wonder what the word vlinder means, that's the Dutch word for butterfly.
Oh, that's cool. I had no idea because I don't know any Dutch. But yes, that's neat. Well, thanks for listening to the IPv6 Buzz. You can find us on the Packet Pushers or any of your favorite podcast apps. Just search for IPv6 Buzz. If you like the show, if you can give us a rating on iTunes or Spotify, that really helps us out. If you like the IPv6 Buzz, then we really recommend you check out Heavy Networking Podcast over the Packet Pushers along with Network Break. There's lots of great technical content over there, so go check it out at packetpushers.net. And so long, and until next time, we'll see you on the internet. The IPv6 internet, that is.
Thanks for listening to IPv6 Buzz, a podcast devoted to truth, justice, and 128 bits of address space. IPv6.